welcome to episode 87 of Zion's Finest. This is Kenny Brown. In this episode, I am joined by Aaron Ross, my good brother, who ran Spectre at the Utah Regional, and he made top four. He was 4-0 in Swiss. He beat me in our last round and played very, very well. He's going to talk about it, obviously, as we're going into this, but Aaron was one of the first adopters of Spectre in our local group in terms of he ran it at a store championship or something. I can't quite recall where he ran it first, but he won a store championship with it and has just been doing very, very well with it. I know he's going to say that it's not his preferred list in terms of it's not like his favorite archetype or style, but you should not let that distract you from the fact that he's really good with it and he's really got it figured out. Actually, there is some big news which I wanted to get out of the way. First off, if you are a patron, please, please order your shipping kit from the Etsy page. I've posted it in a bunch of the show notes. I've talked about it on Slack. I really want to get those out the door soon, and I am going to be taking the listing down soon. So just FYI, consider yourself warned. The other thing is that they fixed the spire on Lothal. I couldn't believe it when they did, but Micah sent me a message saying he had gotten a message that they had posted a fix to the forums, which is true. I will actually include a link to that in the show notes. I think a lot of us have been emailing FFG about it for, I don't know, a month or so, trying to get it taken care of, and I can't believe they fixed it. It's awesome. It's not, I mean, Sabine's still really good, obviously, on the Spire, in that she can, all mobile units are good, but Sabine is good because Spectre is good. They're still good with it, but it's nowhere near as bad as it was. And that's just awesome. I mean, it's incredible that they responded to what we were saying was a big problem in the game. They fixed it. The other thing is that they have announced that if you are on the world's wait list, what is going to happen is all of the reserved seats that have not been purchased on March 4th are going to be released for the general public. And I assume that the first people are going to have the chance to purchase them. In fact, I'm sure the only people who are going to have the chance to purchase them are people on the wait list. So if you're not on the wait list and you want to go to Worlds, you should get on the wait list. I think the only problem is that you do have to have an Adepticon ticket in order to get on. I'm not certain what the refundability of those tickets are, but I'm fairly confident that you're not going to be able to get a ticket to Worlds if you're not on the waitlist. So anyway, that is where that is at. We have not gotten any announcement for Lothal dropping in. We expect it'll happen in the next 2 weeks, but who knows? Anyway, that's it. Let's get on to the episode. Hello and welcome to episode 87 of Zion's Finest. This is Kenny Brown and I am joined by my brother, Aaron Ross.
Hello.
Aaron is our illustrious, I would say the first and best adopter of Spectre Cell. And so this is going to be an awesome report. He's going to be talking about regionals. Before we get into it, there isn't any housekeeping items except to remind people that if you're a patron, to go and order an Etsy kit to order your Patreon delivery from my Etsy store. I've put a link to it in the show notes. And if you've got either alt arts or tokens coming, all you're doing is paying for shipping. And then I'm putting it in an envelope and getting it out the door. But besides that, we don't have any news. Again, Lothal has not been announced as coming into the rotation. We're still in regional season and everything is proceeding apace. So Aaron's also feeling a little bit under the weather, everybody. So give him a break if he sounds a little low. But Aaron, give the listeners, maybe people who are new, a reintroduction as to who you are.
Sure. Okay. I'm Aaron Ross. I'm a member of a local community here in Utah. I've been playing Imperial Assault for a couple of years. My first tournament was actually Vegas Regional 2 years ago. And I got kind of drugged down there by some members of Zion's Finest. Of course, we hadn't founded yet, but our community was kind of still the same core people. And I just got kind of drug along and taught the game on the car ride over. And I think I played a couple of very casual skirmishes with Scott, at which point he just had his way with me. So went down there, had enough fun to continue playing. In the last couple of years, I've taken it a little bit more seriously, and I come around for the store champ and regional season. Hoping to make it to Worlds, if Fantasy Flight Games Official Clay happens to hear this podcast, we'd certainly appreciate more at-large seats at the World Championships this year. They sold out while I was working. Thought I'd grab them on my lunch break, which unfortunately started 36 minutes after they sold out. So if anyone out there has a charity spot they'd like to give me because you've already run your regional, I'd certainly appreciate it. But apart from that, that's kind of where I am with Imperial Assault.
That's awesome. And we should say, so you've been playing for 2 years and you have played campaign a lot consistently, right?
Yeah. And that's really the majority of my involvement with the game. So I obviously have a great local community for Skirmish, and I'm pretty good friends with a lot of the people involved with that. But I played primarily campaign. And then when it gets like that time of year, so to speak, when store championships roll around, you know, I'll play for a couple months, then regionals will happen. I'll play for a couple of months. And, I was involved in some of the world championship prep last year for some of our Zion's Finest members. But consistently, I do end up playing campaign a little bit more. But I do very much enjoy the skirmish aspect.
Awesome. Okay, so what we'll do is let's start with, let's do the intro to regionals, describe the list you were running, and then give us some context for how long you've been playing it and just things you've learned in preparation for regionals, and then we'll dive into the Swiss.
Right. So I ran kind of a weird little list. It's called Spectre Cell.
Got him.
So, I boy, have I had an interesting little journey with this list. So is elements of it were being spoiled, and the Spectre Cell skirmish upgrade was spoiled, and we kind of knew what the archetype would look like and that it was pre-built, and a kind of lively discussion began about that. And then we, of course, already had Hera and Chopper in the game, but we're starting to get more members of Spectre kind of trickling through the press releases as Lothal was about to come out. I didn't know that it was going to be what it's become. I should have listened. It turns out it's pretty good.
Yeah. And just and in so terms of like, you weren't aware of like just how dominant it would be. Like,
yeah, I thought it would be good, but, you know, I was a pretty vocal apologist for it, at least in terms of its place in the meta state, in that I thought it would be such a great entry point, and this has proven to be true anyway, but such a great entry point for new players. The price point for it is low if you're just getting into skirmish. The list is pre-built, and it's kind of a skirmish for dummies, so to speak, for people who are just getting into the game. And in fact, we saw some of that at regionals. Maybe we'll talk about that. We had a local player who has played a lot of X-Wing, has played a lot of Legion, played some other tabletop games, but hadn't really done competitive skirmish before, and we handed him a Spectre Cell list. He ended up doing pretty well.
Yeah.
So in terms of like building and maintaining a larger competitive community, especially when the release schedule is what it is and what we all know it is, I think that's a silver lining, you know, on the cloud of Spectre Cell, right?
Agreed. And I also, I mean, like, I think while Spectre Cell is obviously good, we should couch all of these all of this in the fact that like Spectre Cell is good, but people are increasingly thinking about beating Spectre Cell. And yep. So it will always be good. And it's always going to be until, you know, for the foreseeable future, it will be the top dog. But it is not at all the case that, you know, people compare it to things like Ugnaughts or whatever. And I just don't have time for that because it's so clearly not true. Not a fair comparison.
No, there's no map in the rotation. And there won't be when Tarkin when Lothal Waste rotates in, Spire notwithstanding.
Sure.
That is just an auto win for them.
Yeah.
And that was certainly the case for Ugnaughts, and so much the case for them that there's no point in running anything else, right?
Yeah.
With Spectre, that's not the case. They're the measuring stick, right? They're you have to be this tall to ride the ride list.
Yep.
If you can beat Spectre Cell, then you're a viable top tier competitive list. If you can't find a way to consistently beat Spectre, then you need to do some retooling. And that's really its place in the meta, in my opinion, rather than, like you say, this is not really something that's going to be the only viable thing to run or the only thing that top players are going to want to run.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, how
but I enjoy it a whole lot.
Yeah. And you know what the thing is like, so there are times where it, you know, it hashtag feels bad, man, to like play against Spectre, but like, that's how it is with every single list, right? Like IG being able to come in end of round, kill somebody blaze, kill somebody and win the game. That also feels bad.
I mean, everything Dracata and MHD do feels bad, right?
Exactly, like, right? Like, so
this is the worst, right?
So. Yeah, exactly. So I like that's I've kind of learned to like. I think there's that initial reaction where you get beat so soundly by it, and you're like, "Oh, that I don't like this." But
oh, it's broken. Exactly. The game is broken. Yeah.
But as always, people kind of recalibrate.
So. Yeah, Unshakable Vader. I remember was. I mean, I still hate playing against it, but it, you know. It no longer strikes fear in my heart the way it used to and the way I think it used to for a lot of people.
Yeah, agreed.
But that notwithstanding, I do kind of run – we've had Sam, another great player in our local community, on the podcast before who runs SpectraCell. And we do similar things with what we like to do with it. We both put motivation on Zeb to help mitigate things like set for stun and just to give a little bit of extra movement. We both run double pummel. I don't value death blow inspector as much as I think Sam does, and I don't include it in my command card deck.
Okay.
Similar to some of the out of towners who joined us at our regional this last week, I do feel like Spectre's damage profile is a little bit capped at a place where I'm comfortable.
Yeah.
Right? Like if Ezra and Kanan are running together, yeah, they cap out at about 8 Pierce 3, but I mean that's 8 Pierce 3, and Ezra's hitting that, you know, 6 or 7 Pierce 3 really consistently if he's got Kanan. And to me, that's one-shotting enough things, and it's two-shotting everything consistently enough. I feel like Brace for Impact, which is the card I bring instead, helps me to mitigate a little bit of risk. And that's a bit of my mantra when it comes to Skirmish, especially because Campaign is more my background, and there are some nuances to Skirmish. I think maybe this will resonate with some newer players. There are some nuances to Skirmish, just knowing what to expect from certain dice pools and what certain matchups look like on certain maps. And there becomes this intuitive like sense for what the risk is when you're considering making a choice, committing a figure, and just general strategy in a matchup. Do I need to be more conservative? Do I have the beatdown to be aggressive? And some of those like really difficult decisions you kind of have to make on the fly, I don't think come as intuitively to me as some of the other really talented players I end up playing in these tournaments. And so something that helps me to mitigate risk defensively with SpectraCell feels a little bit more helpful than something that helps to mitigate risk of, I guess, low rolling offensively, which Death Blow certainly helps with. But it's conditional. I have to be attacking something that's ranged in the mirror that's not as helpful. And I was a little bit afraid of the mirror. And figures like Sabine really, really love that extra black die. That was a great reasoning there.
Well, it clearly worked, obviously, because, and you should say before the tournament, so how long have you been running SpectraCell and how have you done with it previously?
I'd only been I ran it, you know, we had kind of a release party for Lothal, and I played one skirmish with it and kind of fooled around with it like I think I already did. And I thought, okay, that's fun, but it's pre-built. I'm more interested in other things. And then when we started gearing up for our store championships, Lothal came out in kind of the midst of that. And there was one store championship that I was able to attend here locally after the release of Lothal. And I thought, wow, I don't have a lot of time to prepare for this. This is just thrown together for me already. I'll put together a super defensive suite to help me like hedge my bets, and I'll just bring Spectre. And turns out I won the tournament. The person I played in the finals, Scott Nielsen, was also running Spectre. Yep. And so not only was I successful with kind of my first real foray into competitive play with the list, I also felt like it even though it's maybe not a high skill floor list, I think it's accessible. It did kind of jive with me, just felt natural to run. There are lists that I've tried that just I know are not as much in my wheelhouse. Vader is a puzzle that I'm just never quite sure when to commit. And I'm sure there's some formulaic answers that really talented Vader players could give me about that, but there's something to be said for a list that just suits you, that just feels right. Totally. First time you put it on, it just feels like it fits. And Spectre felt that way for me, and so I kept tooling the command card deck a little bit And when it came time for the local regional, I kind of hemmed and hawed about, well, do I really want to absorb the shame of running less? No one wants to see me play. Or do I want to do something more exotic, or do I want to really stick with what I think really gives me personally the best chance of winning? And that's what I ended up doing. And so I haven't played a ton with it competitively, but I've certainly more than anything else since the release of Lothal. I'm a scum player at heart. I'm a diehard. I want to be running hunters and smugglers and be kind of in that high mid range of damage, but not really have any queen pieces out there, type of a guy.
And we should also, so you have been practicing it. Like, I know you've been practicing it the last few months consistently, right? In terms of like its matchups, you played against Scott. So it is the case
about a month.
Okay.
Yeah, about a month leading up to the regional. Yeah, that is really fair to say that I have gotten a fair amount of practice. I kind of blitzed in a bunch of practice right before the regional.
Yeah.
Robert Mosinger and I had a day where we sat down and we played every single map. His Scum VP versus my Spectre Cell.
Wow.
And we did just mission by mission, did all six, and we kind of had a postmortem after every one, and it was super, super helpful. I highly recommend that type of a thing if you've got a local player who's willing to put in the time with you and just hang out and grab lunch and maybe spend 6 hours playing a skirmish. It was super valuable.
That's incredible. Man, that is incredible. I should also say before we dive into this that people who want to play Spectre Cell should play Spectre Cell because it is a pretty fun list to play, actually. And there is a certain level of intuitiveness to it in that, like, you've only got six figures and you kind of have an idea as to what they're supposed to do generally. And so it's great for new players, but it's also gotten, I think it does have an incredibly high skill cap just because the skill cap comes from like knowing when to position against who you're playing against. Right. And so,
So I think the floor is low, but the ceiling is high in terms of skill ceiling. I do think that there's a lot of room for growth in that, but like, look at your box, right?
Yeah.
Every single figure in that list has a super defined role.
Yes.
Right. I think even more so than Spectre.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure that the criticism, if you can call it that, that the list pilots itself holds as much water as people say it does. I totally agree with you.
Sure. Awesome. All right. Well, let's dive right into Swiss because you were our store champion. You had a round one bye. So let's go straight to round two.
Yep. So round two, I end up matching up with JK from Zion's Finest, and he's running Han Rangers. And Matt Richards, another great skilled player we'll get to later because we ended up meeting in Swiss as well, ran this same list at Worlds. It's kind of the Han Rangers archetype that was around last spring as a really big staple in the meta. They both brought two smugglers. They've got R2-D2. They got Rebel High Command, so they've got really high card draw. We end up playing on Uskru stashes. And in my playtesting, Uskru does feel like the one map where I feel like the map is against me with Spectre.
Yeah.
Because they want to be up in your face as soon as possible most of the time. And their ability to make that approach on a map where the door's opening is so controlled and where a list that can pivot can really pivot. I feel like it's sometimes difficult to close the distance. And it ended up being really, really, really close. To kind of summarize the way that it went, I'm not really sure round by round, but...
What side were you on?
So I ended up... JK got initiative. So I ended up on, I guess, what I'd consider the bottom side of the map. So JK's got the side with the kind of cross of... Yeah.
With the terminal near the terrain.
Yes, and I've got the side with the more exposed terminal kind of below the fountain, and my terminal's opposite the booth.
Yes.
And so what ends up happening is, so I end up having to try to pincer because I'm a little afraid of those Rangers just being able to pivot to one side and just long shot me as I try to make chase. I just tell myself I will lose one figure on the approach, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Because when they get there, of Sabine, Zeb, Ezra, Kanan, three of the four will be alive. Those Rangers will be toast. I'll be fine. So Sabine ends up being the first one who makes it in there, and she drops a parting gift on all three Rangers and Han and 3PO.
Ooh.
They're all adjacent to the spot.
Oh.
And I roll the one surge.
Oh, man.
I get nothing.
Oh.
I get nothing. And I end up getting a shot. And this is round two. Round one, we kind of just been positioning and kind of ducking around each other. But I end up running Sabine and Ezra and Kanan kind of up that side by his terminal on the booth side. And then Zeb is kind of soloing it on the other side with Chopper. And Hera's providing support to that beefier side with one more figures to kind of do what she does in supporting their attacks. So Sabine makes it through into the hallway first, does that, gets a shot on Hera, deals maybe 3 damage. And then I've kind of baited Ezra out in the open because I know set for stun, if he's got it in hand, with his smugglers from all the way across the map, it is a really great play. But I've got Lamb, and Ezra didn't quite have the movement with Brash and everything even to get up as far as I wanted to. So I thought, okay, I have Lamb. I'm going to bait him way out there. If he wants to take a shot, he can take a shot. I'll just lamb it, and then Ezra can actually do things this round. And he ended up taking the bait. He did have Sephiroth's son. He did take the shot. I lammed it. Ezra activates next and is able to pummel. He kills one Ranger and almost kills another. As the round kind of continues to unfold, he, of course, activates the Rangers next to try to salvage the one that's about to die before he goes. He does end up going to Zeb, and it just kind of seems to snowball from there, but it didn't quite. In terms of points, the smugglers were able to take a lot more in terms of
stashes,
areas of control, yeah, the stashes. And I end up having to win on stashes. At the very, very end, what it came down to is I had Sabine on the 2 stashes in the middle, waiting to get 4 points. He had 3PO on a stash and Han on a stash, I think. I was up by 1 point. And so he either needs to try to one-shot Sabine, or I think he picked off Chopper for some points. The way it ended up sorting out is I had to kill 3PO to win. I was down 1 point. I had to kill 3PO to win so that I'd have more points than he would from stashes. Mm. And I end up having an element of surprise in my hand. So Sabine pops around, one shots 3PO, goes back to the stashes, and I win by 1 point.
Wow.
It was 41 to 40 or 42 to 41.
Wow.
It was the closest skirmish, I think, in terms of like not only score, but the quality of play. There weren't really any misplays. The dice variance was pretty dead even. I ran up with Sabine pretty risky at the beginning and didn't up getting anything out of the grenade, but then Ezra makes the power play.
Yeah.
Whereas he gets that Ranger just blasted before he can attack, but the other two did a bunch of work. Just really back and forth. Great match. And we both had buys in the first round. So it was helpful to both of us for strength of schedule, it turned out.
No, sure.
I don't think either of us needed it, but yeah.
That's great, awesome. Coach. And we should also say, so the interaction there, you talked about Set for Sun on the Lamb. There's been a little bit of confusion with that with the forums and on the Slack channel. The ruling is that after on the Lamb, so when a player plays on the Lamb, after they move out of line of sight, if they move out of line of sight, the attacker has to redeclare the target, I think, is the way. Something like that. And because you cannot see them, the attack misses. Like, you can't, like, the attack just stops. So
yes.
JK actually got a ruling from Todd saying that set for stun does not work if on the Lamb is played and line of sight is broken. So just FYI for people wondering.
It's pretty much the only way to say
that
set for stun doesn't happen.
Yep.
It doesn't have to make accuracy, which is nuts because he has this unfocused Alliance smoker shooting from 14 spaces away. And if I don't have Lamb, Ezra's stunned.
Yep.
Turns out it's good.
Turns out it's pretty good.
But hey, I'll take the extra 4 movement. And
that was a great play on your part. I mean, like, what a play. And probably not what JK was expecting, right?
It wasn't. And with as well as he played, if that play doesn't happen, it's kind of hard to be reductive about a play that happened early round two.
Yeah.
In a skirmish that made it to round five, I think, and was a 1-point match. But if that play doesn't happen, I don't think I win the skirmish.
Yeah. It would have been a much trickier proposition, that's for sure. Mm-hmm.
Because I end up trading Sabine for almost nothing. And I think it would have been Sabine for Hera the way it would have worked out. But yeah, I don't think I would have won that skirmish if it's not for that.
Awesome. So round two. Now, we should say there are two players running Han Rangers. Everyone else is running Spectre. Not actually everybody else. Four other players besides you are running Spectre. A bunch of scum was on the table. And then obviously
the vast majority was scum.
Yeah, the vast majority of the thing was scum. But what did you happen to play round three?
So round three, I play Matt Richards, who's running the exact same list. Han Rangers, again, the same command card suite. This is his Worlds list that he did very well with. Ended up 5-2 in Swiss at Worlds, barely missing the top cut. And we ended up playing Tarkin Rogue AI. And so I just played just an exhausting skirmish with JK with the same list. I feel like I have a less disadvantageous map matchup with this one, but it ends up being really close as well, primarily because his smugglers are just able to do so much work on that rotating victory point console. And at the end, so let me tell you about what side. So I ended up getting initiative. I choose the side of the treehouse, so kind of the outside deployment zone with the exterior spaces. And the way it all kind of shook out is we both were pretty aggressive about opening doors. I kind of learned from a match with JK that I need to get at those Rangers and hopefully kill one before they're able to attack. If I can kill two Rangers by, the middle of round three, I feel like I'm good. If I kill two Rangers by the middle of round two, I'm ahead. So I was pretty aggressive about going after those Rangers. And so all the doors just flew open as early as possible, and we're just trading shots. Meanwhile, his smuggler is I do kind of pot shot a smuggler with the parting gift, and I think Hera is able to get a damage on and just get rid of a smuggler. But one of them is just running amok and just picking up points left and right. But then I ended up getting some fortunate rolls where the pretty frequently the points would end up down by the treehouse, and Sabine could just like move out to and shoot and move back to her treehouse and get two victory points for her troubles. And so,
that's so awesome.
I was able to kind of stay in it with that. And as it came down to the very last, the way it worked out is we had very, very little plastic on the map. I think at this point he's got Han and his smuggler, and that's it. Interesting point of fact, I didn't declare an attack on Han on the entire day. I ended up playing Han 5 times. I feel like I've learned that lesson. I feel like that's a good rule of thumb. I just never bother.
Yeah.
So he's got Han and one smuggler, and I've got Chopper and I think Sabine. And maybe Kanan. But if memory serves, Kanan is kind of hurting and I've kind of run him away in order to deny points, because the way the math kind of worked out is he needed that point to land on one of the three options to push it to another round where maybe he could come back, and doesn't end up getting the luck, and Chopper is able to claim the last 2 points by moving out and just double moving to the console and claiming the last two. But it ended up being, I think, something in the neighborhood of 28-40.
Wow. Okay. So close, not a blowout, but not he's obviously able to kill like
King, and all of a sudden he's 36, 38.
Yeah.
And he's back.
But, sure.
Yep.
Awesome. So that was round three. On to round four.
Round four. I don't know. It was a dumb list and a weird list, and I didn't have any fun playing against it.
No one ever does.
Yeah. So this guy named Kenny Brown brought kind of a smuggler box. He's got Han and Drakata. He's got MHD. He's got the Rebel Care Package. And in this iteration, he's running two Alliance smugglers instead of R2-D2.
Yep.
I'm just curious. So if you bring R2-D2, let's say when the Lothal Waste rotates in, what do you do with the other point?
Probably Balance of the Force is the idea. I've thought about, like, I mean, extra armor's fine, but it's almost kind of... extra armor is good, but probably Balance of the Force. And then I can do more things like Slippery Target, or actually, I mean, I'm like already kind of tapped out for most of my command cards. I mean, there's still command cards that I could include, so that's probably the idea. Yeah. But I'm not.
You're running Tough Luck, so maybe Dow.
No, I wasn't running Tough Luck. I did not run Tough Luck at the tournament because I figured there was going to be a lot of Spectre Cell. And so I'm like, right. I don't care as much about the defensive reroll. And if people are not running, you know, if people are not running lots of, I didn't think there was going to be many weak ways and many Alliance Rangers, right? So with that being the case, I'm like, I don't want to invest a lot in this card that might not do a ton, except maybe remove a die, which isn't, that's not negligible, but not as amazing as other things.
Yeah, well, and lo and behold, you end up playing a ton of, at least playing in a field where there was just a ton of, there were three Han Rangers lists, other Rangers with like some jank. There was like a Han Chewie Rangers list.
Yeah, and there were Equays everywhere. So
yeah, everywhere. Yeah, you know? And Greedo and Vento and all kinds of stuff. But so Kenny and I end up playing on Usru droids. Of course, my initial thought when I see that, I was like, great, okay, so the map doesn't matter. I've just got to get there as soon as possible.
Yep.
But you end up having the action economy, especially with Mach, kind of doing nothing but hanging around waiting to play Strat Shift, who's able to get some damage out basically for free on droids. And then your smuggler terminal sitter can kind of do the same thing. And I end up having to kill a droid because you've killed one of mine in order to stay even.
Yeah.
And I'd like to hear what you think about this matchup too, but the way I kind of remember it is, I end up having to run. So as in my matchup with JK, you're able to take the top, kind of the side, we've got the booth side terminal and you've got that cross in the middle.
Actually, I think in our map, I was on this one. I was on the other side.
Were you? Okay.
I think I was.
The thing I do remember is, so on the opposite side of the horizontal hallway on both sides of the map from the terminal, you've got the access to the center without the door, right?
Yeah.
You've got the one side without the door. And yep. I think that I end up having to, because of the way the doors open, run all the way away from my terminal and kind of pivot with my entire list, kind of the long route around.
Yeah.
Or at least that's what I chose to do. And so I really wasn't in your face till round three, if I recall.
Yeah, I mean, the thing was your approach was a little bit conservative, but it was actually good because I was never able to... I mean, to be honest, like, our game wasn't really close just because I was never able to get any kind of a swing off, right? Like, by the time I could take shots, you were in my grill and you just applied a lot of pressure quickly, right? And so I'm trying to get value out of Jakata by getting shots, but you've positioned yourself in a way that I can't get a shot unless I have arcing shot, which I didn't have, that I can't get a shot without putting her in a position where she's just going to die. So you left me with no good choices, right? In terms of, I'm trying to get as much value as I can out of Han and just shooting people, but I'm just not pulling people off the board fast enough. And you're able to get MHD and Jakata before I'm able to, I might have played Miracle Worker, but I only
think I MHD got... saved himself.
That's it. You're right. So,
but yeah. So, in kind of the way I thought about that, and the why I approached it the way I did, was that my thought was, if I can limit the efficiency of the really only two attacks you get during the round, and then Han gets his in a round, right? But but during the round, you've got two attacks that are of real concern to me.
Yep.
And any limit to the efficiency of those attacks is way more harmful to you than, say, one of my four damage dealers that doesn't get to be as efficient.
Yep.
And I feel like that ended up working out such that by the time we were trading plastic, I made every single trade I made was the exact trade I wanted to make.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, I will lose this figure. This is the value I will get. Okay. I need this figure to die. This is what I have to pay for that. And it's really the one skirmish on the day where I felt like I was able to control that.
Yep.
Well, and I feel like that was we ended up playing again, which we'll get to. But I feel like that for me and the way I ended up playing it was one of the differences in the ways that those two skirmishes turned out.
Yeah, I mean, I'll completely concur. I was not in control at all in the game. I tried in terms of, I was like, well, if I can get this card or something, or if he does this, you know, I kept like waiting for an opportunity for a gambit, but you just never gave it to me. So, and you know, and then you just beat me with the math, and it was the exact right play.
Yeah.
So you're undefeated in Swiss.
4-0.
Okay. Which is pretty impressive. You and Scott are the only undefeated in Swiss.
Right. And he's running he's got Vader, Thrawn Palp.
Yep.
And he's bringing an elite death trooper with cross training so that he can bring some spyness in there.
Yep.
And then he's got two officers and all the skirmish upgrades he needs.
Yep.
And so we're the two undefeateds. I end up, the number one seed on strength of schedule, and the number eight seed squeaking in there is Matt Richards yet again with his Han Rangers list.
Yeah.
And so I have to play him twice, a third Han Rangers matchup of the day. We end up playing Mos Eisley, the pick up the box and drop it off side. And it ends up going pretty similarly to our matchup in round four of Swiss, in that the engagement is a little bit more delayed than I'd like it. Mm-hmm. But I end up making only the exact trades I want to. And it never really was close. It was close in score only for a little bit. But when you looked at the score being close and then saw the plastic on the board and how much time was left, I felt like that one went in my favor in a couple of ways. One, I got just an absolute god hand to start. I ended up starting with Lamb, a copy of Pummel, and I think Force Rush. Wow. And then round two, yeah. So in round two, I ended up getting Rebel Graffiti, which really helped, and Tools for the Job. Wow. And so I just ended up getting the cards like when I needed them, in the way that I needed them. And I ended up, Ezra didn't end up using the Pummel, Kanan did, but I ended up making the exact trades I wanted to make. And I think by the time we were starting round four, he had C-3PO and Han and maybe Gideon with one health left. And I had everybody but Sabine.
Wow.
And it just kind of steamrolled.
See, the interesting thing
Ezra had died by then, but only just.
The interesting thing about that is I would expect Han Rangers on Mos Eisley Concealed Treasures to actually have a slight amount of favor, right? Not because right. Lines of sight aren't amazing, but there are lots of long hallways. And he's got two smugglers, so he should be applying pressure with objectives. Like, how were you able to stop him from picking up two boxes and then just murdering you as you approach? Like, what was your strategy there?
So I didn't. Unfortunately, wasn't really able to mitigate the smugglers as much as I'd like to
have. They just didn't matter.
Yeah. So the score was close, and I should qualify this in that. There were a couple of points where if he dodged twice in a row with a smuggler, he could have won.
Okay.
Because the score was close enough, he was really playing the map.
Okay.
But by the time playing the map got enough points to compensate for the figures I was removing, he had so few figures on the board to mitigate what was just running amok, that I had oodles of attacks to kind of take out the smugglers at the end and secure the victory. Okay. And there wasn't really enough on the map to remove enough plastic quickly enough to secure the win. But okay. It's kind of like yours. I think ours was close-ish in score as well. But by the end, all the support and Drock were gone, and you've got Han and a smuggler. And even though it's close on the scoreboard, it's not close on the game board. And
yeah, sure.
It's kind of the way it was with Matt.
Okay. Awesome. All right. So that was top eight. Oh, the next round, the next one was our match. Okay.
Yep. And so my round three, round four ends up also being my top eight, top four in that order. Man. So I play JK, Matt Kenny. So we match up against Tarkin Weapons. It's the only map that hadn't been played. I actually, for the first time, felt like I played Tarkin Weapons well with Spectre. In all my testing, I've always felt like I'm never quite able to get the weapon pickup and to get across the map without just getting obliterated. And so finally, I just in this matchup, I committed. I was like, you know what? I just IDC, I don't care. You know, I'm just going to rush, just bum rush, pick up weapons and run at you.
Yeah.
And ended up making a huge power play. I negate your take.
Yep.
I think top of round two.
Yep.
And initiative. So I've got initiative top of round two. I brash right up in your face.
Yep.
And then I've got Kanan double moving and tapping Spectre into Ezra. Then Ezra's pummeling. Zeb is in your face with a green weapon.
Yep.
I had traded, I think, Sabine at that point, but she got off, if I remember right, one or two shots with a red weapon.
No, she might have. Was
it Hera?
I think it was Hera who did. So you lost Sabine on the approach, but because of how you approached, I was only able to kill Sabine, and then everyone was in my face.
Right, right. And as I recall, the real key to that matchup was a couple of things. So Han having a green weapon was just gross.
Yeah.
But the other green weapon, as I recall, went to a smuggler.
Yep, that was huge.
Because they had three dice now, can really consistently get off that stun.
Yep.
And Zeb can only motivate once around, and Zeb eventually goes down, and I think you prioritized Zeb pretty heavily.
Yep.
And so once Zeb's gone, and you're getting out multiple stuns per round, and I don't even think you played set for stun.
I didn't have set for stun in my deck because I knew you guys were running motivation. So I did not have set for stun in my deck. It was just smugglers with green weapons.
Yeah. But at the end, Zeb and Ezra went down. And I had Hera kind of like taking pot shots with her red weapon, which turned out to be impactful. But Kanan being completely locked down for 2.5, I think, rounds with just a smuggler stunning him, and you didn't really have to commit much more than that to him.
Nope.
Was pretty rough and exactly the right way to play that, because by that point I needed him to do work to win.
Yeah.
And he just did nothing.
Yeah. Well, I would say I have recorded and I will be releasing my short Swiss report and my discussion with Scott. And in that I said, and I'll emphasize now, the only reason I was able to win that game was because at the top of round two, I drew Second Chance and Miracle Worker. So if I would not have been able to do that, I put Second Chance on Dracotta and I had Miracle Worker in hand. So that it was going to take you, I think, and Dracotta had like very little damage on her. I think she might've taken one of your hits. So she's got some damage on her, but it's going to take you at least one and probably two attacks to kill her. But if I would not have drawn those two cards, I would have lost because you could have killed MHD, I'd have Miracle Worker, killed her, and then killed Dracotta. And there was just nothing, I wouldn't have had Miracle Worker, right? So then you just go kill Dracotta and that would have been the game. So
that's a pretty good point, because I don't think you drew black market prices or planning in your opening hand. So you ended up with five cards, three at the end of round one, and you're drawing two.
Yep.
Those two just happen to be the two most important cards in your deck.
Yep.
That's a really fair point. However, I do want to applaud the way you played that game. I think with me in your face that early with weapons, with that much beef, with the pummel combo I want, with initiative at the right time. I really think the way you played, especially with those smugglers, was really smart.
Yeah. You know, I mean, and it was very, very scary, but I mean, obviously like my strategy with the box versus Spectre, especially versus aggressive Spectre, is just attack and collapse, right? Get off shots and then collapse. But I mean, you had just closed the net so well that I needed everything in order to survive, and I happen to draw everything. So
better to be lucky than good.
That's right. I say it. So, well, Aaron, we should say, so yes, our game was still incredibly close, like incredibly close. I think you killed Dracotta with a Skittles rolling Hera. You were even though I was able to lock Kanan down, you were still doing a ton of work. I was just slightly ahead in terms of damage output, but our game was still close. And you had been undefeated up until that point. So obviously, you had an incredible showing at the regional. And you played JK, Matt, and me. And I'm not saying anything in terms of, comparative skill, but I would not, if it was me, right, like, and you replaced me with Scott, I would not want to play Matt, JK, and Scott being the three people I play at our regional tournament. So
yeah,
that is quite the row.
Yeah, I felt... a little bit proud of myself. So my goal was top eight, and exceeded my expectations there a little bit, exceeded my goal a little bit there.
Yeah.
I feel pretty great about my showing. I stuck around to watch the final, and boy, that was a match. I'm really excited to hear yours and Scott's thoughts on that matchup. Because that ended up coming down to the wire too.
It was the absolute wire, decided by a die roll.
Yep. But overall, 21 players.
Yeah,
I'll be surprised if anything exceeds that at all as a U.S. Regional. But if something does, like, that's going to be up there.
Yeah,
I mean, 21's a pretty strong showing. We had three or four from out of state coming in.
Yep.
So even without that, we had over 16 just from local Utah players, most of whom had a good amount of experience, but some of whom were just there and new and there to have a good time and ended up doing well. I mean, William ended up going 3-1 in his first competitive tournament.
Yeah. So. Oh, turns out he's pretty good. So
he's pretty good, and his list was pretty good.
Yeah, his list was awesome. Will was one. He ran Spectre, so he had asked me for a list, and we've talked about Will before. He's one of the newer players. He is, like, I think he was the newest player at the tournament. But he's played other competitive games, and he obviously knows the score on a lot of things. But he, for his first tournament, he did astounding, and so it was awesome.
Well, I was just gonna say we had four people there. From Zion's Finest, who went 5-2 or better at Worlds last year, and then me, and then Robert Mosinger, and then Grant, Drew, and Joey were all great players who flew in from out of town.
Yeah.
I want to speak very highly of the turnout and thank everybody who showed up, because I had a great time, and I hope you did too.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was very awesome. Aaron, I want you to give us some counsel, especially as Spectre player. I want you to give your thoughts in terms of where you think the meta is at. I think there is a consensus, obviously, that Spectre is going to be maybe a quarter to 30% of lists that are played in the next few tournaments. I think it's going to subside a little bit. Scott does as well. But I want you to give us your thoughts in terms of, as a Spectre player, what are you looking for? Like, what do you think is the next challenge or puzzle or problem that's going to need to be solved for the regionals, maybe if we're going to any more, but especially for Worlds?
Well, I do agree that it's at least going to account for a quarter of the meta, but I wouldn't be surprised if it has more than a proportional third of the meta in terms of, Rebel, Scum, Imperial. There are Rebel lists that we're going to see that aren't Spectre. I played Han Rangers 3 times out of 5, but and then the other two were the box. None of that was Spectre. But I do think that Spectre is going to have a similar place of favor in the meta that Scum has had for the last 2 years, right? Like, Scum lists were everywhere, and they ended up boiling down to the same list both the last 2 years, and those lists dominated the meta. I don't think it's going to be like what the Ugnaughts were, but I wouldn't be surprised if we see it as frequently as we saw, say, IG Weequay's 8 activation list that DT1 Worlds with last year. I think it's more than likely to be equally as common, right? Because it's just consistent. It's successful for the same reasons.
Yeah.
In terms of what it needs to succeed, or what teching against it needs to succeed in order to be consistently successful against it, I think I'll address the Spectre player first, right? If you're playing the list, in my opinion, I'll kind of echo some of what Sam's already said on the podcast with this. The sooner you can be aggressive in general, the better for the list. Because ultimately, the sooner the skirmish starts coming down to math, starts coming down to die rolls, starts coming down to, am I dealing more damage more quickly than you are, removing more figures more quickly than you are, the better Spectre will do. Because Absolutely. It's going to win the probability race more often than not. But there are risks that are kind of traps to fall into, such that you try to rush up there as soon as possible, but by the time you get there, Ezra and Kanan are dead, and you're no longer winning the map because you lost so much of your damage profile list-wide, right? And so I think it just takes practice, at least for me. I don't know how to condense it more than that, but if on the approach, generally speaking, you can only lose one figure and have minimal damage on the other three if we're talking about Sabine, Zeb, Kane, and Ezra. And you've got Hera and Chopper still around. I think keeping Hera around is really important, because if she dies quickly, she will not get her value back. Risking Hera for her to get an extra attack off is just not worth it. Her attack isn't good enough to justify losing the support she provides. So, but if on the approach you can only lose one of the four, and it probably doesn't even matter which of the four it is, I feel okay.
That's remarkable to hear you say, because when Sam first said that, I thought, like, this is crazy talk, right? Like,
you're talking about the same thing, lose one figure on the approach.
Yeah, it's like, and I just think, like, that's it is so not how most of us play, right? Like, you do not want to think, like, I'm going to lose, unless you're playing Imperial Troopers. That's, like, the only time where you're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to lose people, and I just don't care, right? Like, if Han Rangers, you're like, I do not want to lose any of these guys, right? Like, if I lose two, I've lost the game. So,
right. Well, there's some provisos to that. Yeah. So, sure. Like, I know I have to probably be aggressive enough that I can't avoid losing one on the approach. I'm going to try, but I probably have to play aggressively enough that I can't totally avoid that. But I can try to choose the figure I lose.
Yeah.
Quite often it ends up being Sabine, because she, A, has the easiest ability to get value on the approach. She can double move and still drop her thing, her parting gift. She can attack. Her range with Hera's support can actually be pretty great. I mean, she's got minimum six if she's got Hera.
That's a great point.
With a couple of green dice and a blue that are likely to roll above their minimum, I feel pretty comfortable from seven or eight if I've got Hera. So I could, on the way down the lane, I feel like I can get more out of Sabine than Zeb, who really wants to be attacking twice, or Kanan and Ezra, who are melee. So if Sabine's the one I lose on the approach, I've probably already gotten some value out of her, right? Whereas once she's up close, she's a white die figure, where if she doesn't dodge, she's going to melt. She doesn't have lamb. So I'm probably okay with that. And then once I'm up front, obviously the most important figure to still have is probably Ezra, because of the pummel play. And the way I've got my deck built, I've got Force Surge, I've got Fleet Footed, I've got Heart of Freedom, and then Brash and Motivation, and all of those things can kind of help set up the pummel. So he's probably the most important, the one I least want to lose. And so he's probably the one I'm most okay with losing. But so the more I can control that risk, the better. But yeah, I think it's unavoidable against any list that's competent that you're going to kill one Spectre before they get to you. And I think that's the way you play it.
Wow, that's interesting. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. And as you're saying this, I realize I'm not saying it's a mistake to attack Sabine, but her grenade does feel real bad, especially against the box. But Zeb can like kill two of my figures pretty easily, right? Like two of my supports on his activation, and he is also really good at killing smugglers, which hurts because of that red attack. So, man, that's a really interesting point to think about. That Sabine is probably, if you're running a super defensive list, not who you want to target, right? Like, you want to go for these guys who are going to get a lot of value once they're in your grill.
Yeah, I think the first, like, if you can choose your target, let's flip it around now. Let's say you're playing against Spectre and you've got a longer range or a more defensive list where you're going to kind of let them come and try to mow down as much as you can on the approach. I think Kanan is the first you go for.
Yeah, I agree.
Because Ezra is their most valuable once he gets up close, but he's so risky to attack. I think with things like Lamb and the chance to dodge and the two built-in block and the white, he's such a monster to try to attack that the way to limit his value in your face is to take away his set die.
Yep.
And Kanan's got a black die, and he's got, you know, less health than Zeb. He has less chance to get any value until he's in your face than Zeb, because at least Zeb can double move and still attack. Zeb can move and get a ranged attack. Kanan's got double move until he's at you. And I think that's your best chance to completely eliminate a Spectre before they do anything for that player. And so I think Kanan is your target of choice if you have the choice. Sometimes Zeb is good. If you can get rid of Chopper early, that's also a really strong play because the activation cycling for Spectre can be really important. And they're already only at 6. So if you can, especially in the mirror, if you can take out Chopper early, it's crippling.
Yeah, that's a great point.
If you can take out Hera, you know, a more skilled player who has the flexibility to do so, given the map and whatever the matchup, is going to really protect Hera and Chopper. But either of those, you know, obviously you're going to take the easy kill if you can get it. But
yeah, my plan versus Spectre on Uskru, if I got the bottom side, was to kill Chopper when he went for his terminal, because the ability to be one, have them be one more activation down, it also makes them taking initiative. They'll do it with Hera, right? But that hurts because you want Hera to also eventually just, you want her to be close enough, right, that she's going to be adding value in terms of these attacks. So
I also think it doubles down on a weakness for your opponent, right? That their card draw is already limited enough and their cards can be so impactful. Yeah, all of their cards in their suite are good. Yeah, they're not super card dependent in that they don't rely on a combo or a single card to win. But their cards are all really impactful. And if you can early eliminate half of their card draw, that's pretty strong too.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. Yeah. Well, Aaron, do you have any other counsel for us?
Well, I think in terms of exploring new list archetypes, one thing I would suggest, so I do think with the current map rotation and your smugglers, I think maybe your list in particular can do away with it or do without it. But I really do think Sephiristan is so essential if Spectre is going to stick around, and I think it will. I think Sephiristan is such a huge, huge play, especially if you've got if you have things in your list, and most non-Spectre lists do, that don't care all that much about the efficacy of their attacks or their action economy. You've got a smuggler, you've got a Jawa, you've got an officer, and you can, you know, quintuple their value by stunning Ezra or Kanan or Zeb. I just think it's too good a card not to take if Spectre is going to be around.
Do you think this is the case even if Spectre players, because the reason I didn't run Sephiristan is because I knew you would be running Motivation and Sam. Yeah. And so you think it's still good even in the face of Motivation?
Well, I do, but I think if you see Motivation, then you keep it in mind in terms of when you decide to make that play. Sure. So you're never going to, if they've got Motivation on Zeb, for example, you never want to use it in a round where Zeb hasn't activated yet, right?
Yep.
If Zeb can reasonably get line of sight to the figure who's stunned, then it's a waste. The thing that I noticed, though, is against Spectre, almost everyone will guarantee go last. Very few lists out there are going to have 6 or fewer activations that are not Spectre. The VPT lists at times do. But I think you can really control when you want to use that card, when you want to use that attack. And even at the end of the round, even if all you do is prevent Brash, I think that's an effective use of the card. It costs you.
Agreed. That's a good point.
And so use it at the end of the round, it's unmitigatable. Unless they decide, well, actually, no, it is. Even if they've got Heart of Freedom, because that must be played during figure's activation anyway, and Brash happens being around. So yeah, even if it just prevents Brash, I think it's worthy, especially if it's early on, because you're just delaying when Ezra's in your grill.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I also think that if I'm the Spectre Cell player, the threat of having to think about whether I withhold Zeb's activation until later in the round, just in case, is helpful to my opponent. Good and it's quite often not the right choice, regardless, to have Zeb's activation wait, because I can get so much more value if the situation is such that, you know, he can get his double whammy off. Sometimes it's unavoidable to take that risk and activate the figure with Motivation attached. And then once they go, you're free to set for stun and have at them. And I do think that it's still, with the proliferation of Motivation, I think even if it's not removing stun, Motivation is still worthy to bring for Spectre players on the other side of that argument, right? Everyone's running set for stun, fine. I'm bringing Motivation, but even if no one's bringing Sephiristan, I'm probably still bringing motivation because sure. its value for that extra movement point can be so critical that extra one damage can be so huge. And there are lots of things that can stun now that are around, maybe not lots, but enough things that can stun out there now that I'm worried about more than just step for stun in terms of removing conditions.
Yeah, that's a great point. I feel like, Aaron, you've kind of given the keys to the kingdom because that is some incredible insight in terms of like timing and gameplay with that card combo. So that is something that people who are not running Spectre should be giving some very serious thought to in terms of like mm-hmm. maximizing value, especially I think your point about set for stun stopping Brash, which is not something mm-hmm. I think most people would think about. But man, the ability to stop Ezreal from being able to move forward and get off that power play at the start of the next round just seems invaluable.
I agree. And there's one more note, if I may, that I'd like to add on to that in terms of limiting Brash. One of the most impactful ways that can affect a skirmish is that it prevents top around pommel. Or just delays them being able to get off an attack that maybe they couldn't get to without those extra four spaces of movement. I think there are far more candidates than usual for negation against Spectre Cell than against any other list. There are some zero cost cards that can completely make or break a round. Things like Force Rush. I in a practice skirmish against Scott, I just had it won. I had everything I needed. I was going to come in and make the big power play. I was going to kill Vader, and it was over.
Yeah.
But I needed those two movement points at the top of Ezra's activation to make it happen, and he negated Force Rush, and it won the match for him. So if you feel like you're coming to the ultimate or penultimate round and you're not as worried about the take initiative play or Rebel Graffiti even, I'd strongly consider things like Fleet-Footed or Force Rush, because the Spectre player isn't playing them unless they're leading to an incredibly impactful activation. And you can completely negate that activation by playing negation.
Yeah, Force Rush. If I see Force Rush, I am... Yep. If I've got negation in hand, there is a 80% chance, unless I've got, you know, everything else, like Miracle Worker or something else, I'm going to play negation. Because
urgency is another, but I don't personally run it. I have enough else going on for movement, but urgency is another I'd consider.
Yeah, because urgency also, it doesn't quite synergize as well with pummel. Are you running Force Push?
I am running Force Push. It costs one point, so you can't negate it. But yep, I am running exactly Force Push. Yeah.
Okay. Man, that's scary. That's such a scary combo. Because with Ezreal, with Brash, Force Rush, and Pummel, he can get somebody eight spaces away at the start of the round and still pummel them, right? Like, wow, that's disgusting.
Yeah, and if he doesn't have to go first, it could be nine spaces because Zeb's motivating him on top of all of that.
Wow.
It's just crazy. Yeah. Yep.
Well, that is incredible. Are you planning on going to Denver, the regional?
I'm not sure if it's going to work out for me schedule wise. I'm going to kind of see what the interest is, with other people in terms of, either setting up a road trip carpool or maybe, getting, plane tickets and housing and renting a car together to kind of mitigate costs. I'm going to kind of look at that and make a more educated decision here in the next week or so. But I am definitely considering it, especially because spots at Worlds are at such a premium.
Yeah.
I am on the wait list and, I've got my fingers crossed kind of there, but yeah, I think if I can make it work to go to Denver, I'd like to give it another run to try to win a regional.
Are you planning on just continuing to work on Spectre?
No, that's not necessarily the case. So I was actually pretty set to not run it, at the Utah regional, and had kind of changed to doing a Scum VP, iteration, kind of similar to what Robert Mosinger ended up running, but a little bit different. He brings Onar in place of where I bring weak ways, and I think with the extra point he puts scavenged weaponry on Sabine, which I do not do. And I did really enjoy that list, but felt like I didn't get the playtesting in that I wanted to with it. I ended up kind of coming down with the sickness, as you can kind of hear in my voice, and also kind of just running out of time and getting busy the week leading up to the regional. So I wasn't able to playtest that as much as I'd like. And so I ended up going back to what was familiar. Going to work Denver, I'm going to try to get that playtesting in and then make an informed decision from there, which I'm going to play at the regional, but that's where I am.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we want to congratulate you on your excellent showing at the Utah Regional.
Thank you very much. You as well, our regional champion.
Yeah, there you go. Well, it is better to be lucky than good, and I got very lucky at crucial junctures, so I'll take it. We want to encourage everybody to get on the Slack as we are gearing up for Worlds. It's in 2.5 months, which is insane to me. But we're also working on general logistics in terms of we want to have like a Slack hangout and like other things like that. So, also if anyone gets any information about the wait list, what I'm trying to do right now is just get an idea as to how many people are on the wait list. So we know that what FFG is doing is they had 40 open seats and then 40 seats that were reserved, and they're reserved for like DT gets one. I think I know that nationals winners get a seat, and then regional winners get a seat. Like in terms of regional winners are offered a chance to purchase a seat. So for us, like in our Utah regional, I actually asked about this, Aaron, if I could give you my like chance to, because I had already gotten a ticket. And so I asked our local store owner if I could give you my win in terms of like telling FFGU one so you could purchase the ticket. And he said no. And so I think that what FFG is doing is regional winners who already have a ticket, they're just going to be releasing their seats back open, you know, or whatever the word is for people who are on the wait list. So what I'm trying to figure out is how many people we've got on the wait list, because we know they have got 40 reserved seats. I can think probably 15 that I am sure are going to be taken by like DT, nationals winners, things like that, and people who have won a regional but weren't able to secure a ticket. But you know, that's 25 other seats at least that are open. So I'm just trying to get some kind of idea. So if you are on the wait list, please let me know on the Slack. I posted it in the important news channel. I've also posted it on the forums. I'm going to post it on Facebook. I'm just trying to get an idea in terms of seeing what our capacity is at. So
in addition to that, if you have a seat secured by buying a ticket when they opened and have since secured a reserved seat by winning a national or regional championship, and know that that seat will then come open to others, it would be useful to have those numbers as well, so we can cross-reference and see if the new open seats exceed or don't quite meet the number of people on the wait list.
Great point. That is a great point. So just any information we can get would be awesome. I'm just trying, because I think the problem is like, we want people to be able to come to the come to Worlds, but it's really tough if someone doesn't have a ticket to wait until, you know, the end of February, right? Like when they're going to win a regional or something. So, and I don't know what FFG's plans are. I mean, because regionals are going to be going until the end of February. Yep. So I don't know. Yep. Like we're just trying to get some information on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, Aaron, again, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening, everybody.